With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Whether you seek adventure, search for answers, break down barriers, or see the world for what it can be, you're just what we're looking for. CIA is searching for women of all skill sets to join the Directorate of Operations and help protect our nation. Visit cia.gov/careers.
Celtic State of Mind. It is Friday, and myself, Laura, I'm joined by Liam from Celtic Down Under. How are you doing, Liam?
Good. I know what your viewers are probably all thinking. Oh God, Henry Cavill's really let himself go. Eh?
I saw absolutely no difference personally, less said about that, the better. I think we've spoken. You said before we went on the show that you've spoken to me more than you've spoken to your wife today, but we'll not talk about that.
What happens on Axon stays on Axon. Anyway.
Exactly. Lots to discuss today, not least the Celtic Christmas advert, which has become, in my mind anyway, a staple of British or Scottish culture, I should say, larger at this point than the John Lewis advert. Would you agree?
I definitely await it with greater anticipation, put it that way.
We'll put it that way. If you've not seen it, it went live on the Celtic YouTube channel just about 20 minutes ago. What's your thoughts on it? Break it down for us. Give us an analysis. What's your favourite bits?
Well, first of all, I've got to be careful because, you know, there is that rule that every time you mention Christmas before December, Santa executes an elf. So I don't want to be responsible for any murders here.
For any children watching, I can confirm that is absolutely not true.
Okay.
Anyway, carry on.
It's lovely. It's just the thing is being away from Scotland for as long as I have been, living in Japan, you know, well, living in Asia since 2006, give or take a couple of years in Hong Kong as well. It was a very nostalgic tour of Glasgow. You know, you see like there's a flyby of like the Barrowlands of the Duke of Wellington statue with a cone on his head, green and white, of course. And it was just really, kind of hitting all the right notes. And I'm like, I need to go to those places when I'm back in town next month, you know?
Yeah. Here's my ignorance showing. What's the weather like in Japan at Christmas time? Do you get snow or do you get... What's it like?
Well, it really depends on where you are in Japan. Like, down south in Okinawa, that's like Hawaii. That's never cold.
Right.
But where I am in Nagano, which is pretty much smack bang in the middle of Japan, about an hour and a half north of Tokyo, it's very cold in winter. Although it gets colder in January here, whereas the coldest time in Scotland is usually December, isn't it?
Mm.
So the seasons are a wee bit out of sync, but January and February here are absolutely Baltic.
Make me feel at home if I was there. That's the only thing I can say.
I mean, right now it's 9:30 and it's... let me just check my wee watch here. It is currently sitting at 7 degrees.
Ouch. So, ouch.
I mean, hence why I've got the sweatshirt on.
Anyway, less of the weather updates and let's get on to the more important things. The first thing I want to say is, if you haven't seen the advert, then definitely go and watch it. But I have to commend Celtic for really sticking to the core values of the club with this Christmas campaign and Share the Magic, where if you go online to the Celtic Superstore, as I'm sure many of you are going to do anyway for this Christmas, you can buy items off what's called Walfred's Wishlist, and that will make a contribution to the Celtic FC Foundation, which will help people in the community who are less fortunate this Christmas, as it's going to be a difficult time, I'm sure. And I would also like to extend a very personal thank you to our captain, Callum McGregor, who has advised Celtic to make a donation on his behalf from the takings for his book, The Making of a Celtic Captain. He is making a donation, obviously, to the Celtic Foundation, but also to a cause that's very close to my heart, very close to many of the hearts of the people watching, which is the Glasgow Children's Hospital charity. I guess Paul John has very kindly offered me this platform to say thank you to Callum on behalf of everybody at Axom and from myself personally. It's a cause that I think so often goes unnoticed. Many of the people in the chat, myself included, have been directly affected by the work that goes on at that hospital. Many have family members and friends who would not be here without the work of that hospital. And although it's nice to donate to them at any time, particularly at this time of year when there are going to be children away from their families in hospital over what should be a happy and joyous time for everybody, it makes so much of a difference to their lives that you can donate and give them treatments, give them extras, give them resources to make their stay in hospital not only successful in terms of treatment, but much more pleasant for children and their families. So thank you very much, Callum. Liam, I'm sure you echo the sentiments.
Absolutely, yep. Fantastic charity. And I think especially in the current, shall we say, social political climate and what's happened in the world in the last couple of years, I think any hospital charity in general needs as much support as it can get right now, because the things that our doctors, nurses and other medical staff have been through to keep us all safe in the last couple of years is quite incredible. And you know, they deserve every single bit of support that we can give them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Feed the Bear says, Laura, where's the link to donate? If you go onto the Celtic website, the link to the Walfred wish list is on the website, as well as links to buy Callum's book. I believe the donation to the Celtic Foundation and to the Children's Hospital is only contributed through sales directly through Celtic. So if you are going to buy those items, please make sure to do it through the club to make sure that those funds are raised for the appropriate sources. With that said, and I hope everybody doesn't think we've started on too much of a downer, we will we will crack on. And I've got a little bit of fun for you, Liam, this week. So obviously we've got the World Cup starting on Sunday. Everybody might have seen during the Friday bulletins when I've presented in the summer, I like to do a feature called Guess the Celt, which is, well, it started as a way to kind of fill up a bit of time when there wasn't much news going on, but actually it turned into like quite a fun wee feature. So What I thought I would do is put a little bit of a twist on it during the World Cup, and I would do a Guess the Celt, but regarding players who've actually played for Celtic and at the World Cup. Now, a couple of provisos with this. Doesn't have to be a current player, and the player doesn't have to have played at the World Cup while they were a Celtic player.
Right.
They just have to have played for Celtic and also played at the World Cup.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the clues that I have. I have five clues, and you can tell me if you've guessed it
right
before I finish the five clues. But we're not going to reveal the answer until the end of the show, okay?
All right. Okay.
Okay. So if you're in the chat, then guess away. I'm hoping that my clues aren't too obvious, but we'll see. Let's go for it. So, I was born in 1983. Doesn't narrow it down very much.
Mm-hmm.
I got as many caps for my country as I did appearances for Celtic. I made my debut for Celtic in a 4-2 victory over Dunfermline in the Scottish Cup. I got 10 caps for my national team. And here's the one that I think people will get it from. This is the last clue. Mm. Despite only getting 10 caps for my national team, I was a runner-up at a World Cup and appeared in the final. Who am I?
Yeah, I know that.
So I'm sure lots of people have got it. I've already seen it coming through in the chat. It's a little bit of fun. So we'll reveal it at the end of the show. But in the meantime, have at it and see if you can find out who it is. I'm going to need to work harder, according to the comments, because I think people are getting it already. Anyway.
I'm just worried if I can remember how to pronounce his name correctly.
We'll see. And we might do a little bit of a chat then to see what you remember of the player concerned and his era at the club. Anybody who's guessed it already will know it wasn't a very auspicious era for the club, let's put it that way. Anyway, Liam, before we go on to talk about the Sydney Cup, which is what we're here to talk about, just wanted to get your thoughts as a relatively new member of the Axom team.
Mm.
The success of the club, of the podcast, I should say, at the Football Content Awards the other night, we won gold again. Now, I know we've already gone on about it since we won in yesterday's bulletin, but again, I would like to extend my thanks to everybody watching, to Paul John for allowing us this platform and allowing us to contribute to what's become such a successful podcast in its own right. What does it mean to you, Liam, to be part of this award-winning podcast?
It's an honour, and it's kind of living the dream, actually, because I've been doing Celtic podcasts in one shape or another for close to 10 years now. Started off with a show with a few Celts down in Australia called the Half the World Away Celtic Podcast back in 2013.
I love that name, by the way. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah, it was excellent. That was the Kevin O'Neill and Pat Close and Martin were the three guys that I did that with. And that unfortunately work commitments meant we couldn't continue with that, so I moved on to doing Celtic Down Under as we're doing now. And then we got involved with Axom. But throughout all that, for as long as Axom has been going, I've been following it. I was a fan of the show, and now I'm on the show, and that's quite an astonishing thing when I think about it, really. All I'm saying is, I joined the show, and 2 months later, we win a national award. So, Paul John, you want to give me that 10-year contract, 100 grand a year? I'm happy to sign it anytime soon.
Yeah. I have to say that the multiple awards we won last year were absolutely nothing to do with it, and it was definitely Liam's addition that really tipped it over the edge. So, on behalf of all of Axom, I want to say thank you, Liam, for giving us your time.
Yes, what a tremendous honour it is, I imagine.
No, in all seriousness, the real thanks, quite both Liam and I would admit we play a very small part in this.
Paul John is the
driver behind all of it, so thank you to him, and most importantly, thank you to everybody watching this, because it was your votes that got us this award, and it's you that we do this show for, so thank you very much. Anyway,
Shout out to Natasha getting the silver award as well. She did
absolutely
really well.
Natasha, not only on Axon but across a number of outlets, has been covering women's football and got an award for silver in the best in women's football category. So congratulations to her. I'm sure it won't be too long before she takes home the gold at some point.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Tony Cassidy comes up with this one. It's all down to Liam's attire. I'm sure it. Listen. There are not enough awards in the world to benefit that man. That's fantastic. But anyway, the Sydney Cup, I have to say, Liam, you might be in a time zone better acclimatized to this potentially. Mm. I am not. So I haven't actually managed to see the Sydney Cup highlights or anything like that. I don't even know where to get them. But in a way, I was a little bit shocked to see that we lost. But then that's maybe me doing a disservice to the Australian A-League and the quality of the teams they're in. A lot of people coming out having positive things to say about Sydney FC. Did you see any of the highlights? What was your thoughts on hearing the result?
Yeah, well, first of all, I know he's not listening because he doesn't speak English, but thanks to my boss yesterday for letting me go 10 minutes early so I could get home in time for kickoff.
Excellent.
I really was pleasantly surprised at what a competitive game it was. Now, obviously, Celtic, particularly in the first half, it was a weakened team. And more importantly, it was a group of players who, it was quite obvious, are not used to playing with each other. Particularly the defence didn't seem to know where to go half the time. Bernabe, in particular, was frequently caught well out of position. Sydney were a breath of fresh air. It was really good to see a team for once come at Celtic and have a go and make a really good, entertaining spectacle of a game. And you know what? They were worthy of the win in the end. I don't grudge them it at all. I think this is a great vindication of the A-League as a football level that is quite often... I mean, I'm a big advocate for the J-League. I think the J-League is a fantastic league. It has produced some great players down the years, some of which are currently at Celtic, but also it has the competitiveness which other leagues don't, because basically a different team wins the J League every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the A League is quickly ascending to that same level. I think the A League, it's maybe not quite there yet, but I think in a year or two with the continued development, the A League will be as entertaining a spectacle and as high a level of quality as the J League. It may even surpass it.
It's interesting to get your perspective on this, and we will get back to Celtic in a second, but just because you're living in a different part of the world and have a different perspective on it all, I wonder if does the lack of quality across like the Asian Champions League hold back the leagues themselves, do you think? Because I know that a lot of the European leagues benefit from this hallowed turf of the Champions League and getting to that level and striving to reach that level. I don't know, does the Asian Champions League have that same cachet amongst the domestic leagues in that part of the world?
No, it doesn't. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, in the Asian Champions League context, you have basically Japanese teams, Korean teams, Australian teams, and Chinese teams. Those are the only ones that really have a realistic chance of winning it. So you've kind of got the same problem as Europe in the sense that you've got these four or five big nations in the sense of the development of football that dominate, and that makes it less of a spectacle for anyone who's from any of the other countries that are watching. That is why, you know, when you look at, for example, in the World Cup, you see squads like Saudi Arabia who do not have any overseas players, and it's because their league has not developed to the extent that it needs to. And then going to the other extreme, you've got China, who their club teams do all right in the Champions League, but they are utterly rank rotten at international level.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason for that is because they are a about 20 years behind Japan in terms of the development of the league. Because mm-hmm. Japan had the same problem initially. When the J-League launched in 1993, it was mostly just a retirement home for foreign stars. Mm-hmm. You had Gary Lineker, Zico, Pierre Littbarski, you know, numerous other great players in their day, but clearly past their prime and went to Japan for one last payday. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, Lupo actually signed for Jeff United Chiba.
When was that?
I think it was after he left Celtic, but I don't know if he ever actually played for them. It was a bit of a weird contract situation, but he was on the books of Jeff United for a brief period.
Wow.
But now, as time's gone on, the Japanese have moved away from that, and they actually have basically a five foreigners rule now, essentially, where you can only have a maximum of five foreign nationals in your squad, which leads to greater development of Japanese players. Also leads to a lot of Brazilians and Koreans taking Japanese passports, but that's
I was going to say, I've seen a few Brazilians playing for the Japanese national team over the years.
Yeah, but you know, those guys, you have to be in Japan for at least 5 years to qualify for that. So they've earned that, right? You know.
Yeah. And we've had this conversation before about, you know, representing the country you want to represent. It might not need to be the country of your birth. So that's fair enough. Mm. I guess in a wider context, looking back at Celtic and the Australia.
Sorry, Laura. Just to finish up my point.
Yeah. Sorry, on you go.
The Chinese league is still at that stage.
Yes.
Where they are a retirement home for past it European players. And they haven't progressed beyond that. Now, the J League progressed beyond that within about 5 years. China hasn't yet because there's too much money and not enough effort going in. They think that if they just keep throwing money at it, it's going to magically produce this generation of brilliant Chinese players. Yeah. And the thing is, once it clicks for them, China will probably within the next 50, 60 years win the World Cup. Because just on sheer population numbers, once enough of them start playing football, they're going to produce a world-class team.
Yeah, yeah. If a country the size of the Netherlands can produce the kind of footballing pedigree that they have, I know they haven't won the World Cup, but if they can produce the kind of footballing pedigree that they have, then I'm sure a country the size of China can. They probably could have 10 or 20 teams worth of players that could do that. So it would be interesting to see. But focusing back on Celtic and focusing on the Sydney Cup, I know we discussed this issue in the run-up to it and back when it was announced. But now that it's here, now that you're seeing some of the publicity that's coming out, you know, the New South Wales governor or whoever it was, you know, getting pictures taken with the Celtic team, talking about the amount of money that it's bringing into the local economy. I guess my question is, ignoring the... Well, we'll start with the footballing side of things. What can Celtic hope to learn from this particular out into Australia? Is there anything footballing-wise they can take from it?
Nah, not really. To be honest, not really. It's during the World Cup, so we have a weakened squad because our best players are at the World Cup. We are there in an ambassadorial capacity. We're there to thank the Australian support for backing us and backing Ange. We are there to hopefully bring in some new supporters who buy into the brand, maybe learn what Celtic are about and think, yeah, I'll have some of that. And we're also there just to spread goodwill and to help out the local economy over there. And, of course, Celtic themselves will make a sizable few quid out of it as well. Everybody wins, basically, apart from us on the football pitch.
Yeah, well, that was the other sort of thing I was going to ask about the commercial side of things. You talk about the and the money has been like forced down the throats of people, I think, in Australia about what that's going to bring in for them. But is there any financial benefit to Celtic doing this, do you think? Is it a drop in the ocean compared to what they could have, or is there going to be a real tangible financial and commercial benefit to doing this either this year or in years to come?
That remains to be seen. And this speaks to a wider problem, which I'm actually in the process of penning an article about at the moment, coming soon to a magazine near you.
Interesting.
It's the idea that Celtic did, not quite on the same scale as the Sydney Cup, but they did a game in Japan not long after Shunsuke Nakamura signed. They played Yokohama in friendly. Now, everybody
it's very common nowadays, as part of a transfer of a player for a friendly to be arranged as part of that transfer. I know the first time I ever heard of it was with George Cadet back when he left Sporting to come to Celtic, but it seems to be more and more common these days.
Well, it's because Celtic have a global fan base. You know that if you book Celtic to come and play, you're guaranteed to get at least probably 15,000-20,000 fans wherever you're playing in the world, right?
Yeah.
But the thing with the Nakamura one, at the time there were all these headlines saying like, oh, this is going to open up whole new markets for Celtic, and Celtic shirts will be everywhere in Japan, and you know, some of Celtic's commercial staff at the time were kind of bumping their gums about how they were going to take Japan by storm. Never happened. Mm-hmm. Never happened. There was, to this day, the only way I can get official Celtic merchandise is either by paying about 5 times the price on Amazon Japan, or ordering it from the club website and waiting for about 3 weeks for it to get here, and then paying almost the same again in import charges. Thank you, Brexit. Celtic, if they... And I don't want to get down on criticising the club and being a Mr. Negative, whatever.
Go for it!
No, but if they approach the Australian operation with the same utter incompetence they've approached the Japan operation so far, they won't make a penny out of it. It'll end up costing them money.
Yeah. Let's get into the nitty-gritty of it, right? Celtic concerned, other teams concerned. I guess my concern about it is I've seen so many teams, and it's become more prevalent in, I would say, the last 5 years. Teams going to Asia, teams going to Australia, teams going to South America or whatever. And especially in the case of the Premier League, and I remember a Milan derby in China, playing against teams that they are domestically up against. I know Man United and Liverpool have played games in Australia in the last few years, in Thailand and things like that. Am I too cynical in thinking it's a bit...
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
It's such a cash grab that it can't even be hidden. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's so cynical. Or is that just me being an entitled football fan living in the Western world, trying to gatekeep these teams because they're where I can easily see them?
No, look, it is a cash grab. I mean, but at the end of the day, every football match is a cash grab, in essence, because ticket prices are far too expensive, no matter what game you go to see at whatever level, right? The whole 20s Plenty campaign of a couple of years ago, I think, was a good initiative, and it's just disappointing that it never gained traction. But to put it in a Japan context, a couple of years ago, Chelsea and Barcelona played one of those kind of like glamour ties in Saitama, which is a couple hours south of here. And you know, Messi put in his token 20-minute appearance. All the Chelsea big names were there because it was a close season and there wasn't a World Cup that year or whatever. And then, you know, later on, Man City did a similar thing. I went to see Man City play Yokohama when Ange was the manager, actually, of Yokohama. And that was a great game. But all three of those clubs, Barcelona, Chelsea and Man City, the game was just one portion of a much wider marketing initiative to break into the Japanese market.
Yeah.
Within about a quarter mile of the stadium, you had stalls everywhere selling official merch. For, you know, a couple of weeks after that, they announced partnerships with their respective brands in Tokyo. So, like, the Nike shop in Tokyo was now carrying Chelsea and Barcelona kits. Puma, I think it is, that sponsors Man City, they announced that they were going to be selling Man City merchandise in their Japanese stores and through Amazon Japan. Celtic, as far as I'm aware, have not announced any similar initiative in Australia, and they certainly haven't announced anything like that in Japan. The games are just part of a much bigger picture. And it really annoys me because I teach primary school kids in my job, right? And here we don't really have uniforms. The Wanes can wear whatever they want, right? And every time I see a kid wearing a Barcelona shirt or a Man City shirt or a Liverpool shirt or a Chelsea shirt, I think, but for us spending a few quid on marketing, that could and should be a Celtic top. You know, and that really... to be quite honest.
And I have to say, from the Japanese perspective, the Nakamura and to some extent Koki Mizuno presence was an opportunity. They will never have a bigger opportunity than now. They've got three superstar Japanese players playing in the Celtic team, and they have one of those players representing Japan at the World Cup while he is a Celtic player. There will be no bigger opportunity, but it remains to be seen if they can make the most out of that. Looking at the rest of the World Cup break for Celtic, we don't, as far as I'm aware, beyond the Sydney Cup, have many fixtures scheduled, if any at all. Do you think that's a missed opportunity? Do you think there's a possibility to you know, more regularly put fixtures in? It didn't need to be as crammed as like a domestic calendar would have been, but certainly there will be other clubs, I'm sure, and other players who are not going to the World Cup who will need to be kept fit. Would you have expected to see more by the way of even closed-door games, or do you think that's maybe going on without us knowing?
Well, I mean, for example, next week, Roma are playing two friendlies in Japan. So it's, you know, it's, I think, what is it, 16-17 hour flight from Glasgow to Australia, right? But from Australia up to Japan is only about 8 or 9 hours. So it's the same as like if Celtic were going to play, I don't know, a team in Kazakhstan or something, right? It's like one of those long distance European ties. But why couldn't they maybe take a week and do a training camp in Australia, then come up to Japan and play a game, then head back to Scotland? It's basically on the way, you know? And I think that would have really given them a chance to have market penetration in both areas.
Yeah, that's fair. The underwater cabbage salesman comes in and says, next season, Laura, is most likely for a Japan trip. Do you agree with that? Do you see that happening? I think they need that. There's two key factors to a potential Japan trip for Celtic. One is, I think the way for it to have maximum impact is to be done while they've still got Maeda, Furuhashi, Hatate and Idiguchi all at the club, but also a key to that is going to be that Ange is still at the club, because Ange has got, perhaps, I don't know, you're better placed to say than me, but as big, if not a bigger following than those players in Japan because of his work with Yokohama. And perhaps the idea of going to see a Celtic team for a Japanese fan is not as enticing if Ange isn't the manager. And I say that thinking that we will be lucky if Ange stays with us probably another couple of years.
Well, you know, I can directly relate to that because back in August, I was down in the Japan Football Museum in Tokyo. And I had my new Celtic top on with Daizen, his name and number on the back, right? Because he used to play for my local team here. And the staff at the museum came up and spoke to me in Japanese. But she said, oh, I see you've got a Celtic shirt on. Now, she saw that it had, you know, Daizen on the back of it, right? And she was like, oh, Celtic, Postecoglou. Didn't mention Daizen, didn't mention Kyogo, didn't mention Hatate. She was like, Postecoglou, because she was a Yokohama Marinos fan. And she said, yeah, that guy is basically, he's a god to us because he won us our first championship in years. And he did it basically from nowhere because Yokohama were a mid-table team when Ange came in.
Yeah. It's an interesting factor, and it was something that I thought to myself when I was considering, you know, I'm surprised they've not booked some sort of trip to Japan already, but if they're going to, it surely needs to be with Ange at the helm. Magnet67 comes in and says that my player was too easy. I fear it was, but you've all got me riled up. Next Friday it will not be so easy, so we'll wait and see. Another thing I wanted to talk about today, I'm just going to pull up here. Aaron Moy has been speaking to the Herald ahead of his trip to Qatar for the World Cup to represent Australia. Along with Maeda, he is another Celtic player in the current squad, along with Josip Juranovic for Croatia, who is going to be representing their country at the World Cup, as well as Cameron Carter-Vickers for the USA. But Aaron Moy was talking to the Herald and talking about how much he's benefited out of his move to Celtic, and I just wanted to read a little bit out of what he said. He says, it was a tough time when I was training in a local park in the summer. I was back home from China with my family, and so there were positives there, but I wasn't playing much football. But then I'm joined Celtic and I'm loving it here. I'm going to the World Cup. It's fair to say Celtic is one of the best moves I've ever made. It's just an amazing club and the fans are incredible. It's a demanding club, but you want to be testing yourself in these kind of situations. Playing for a big club is demanding, and I just want to give my best. I joined Celtic later in the summer, and I agree with the manager when he said, I can only get stronger in the season. As a professional footballer, that's what you want to do. You always want to improve. And he goes on to talk about how playing in the Champions League has potentially helped him prepare for the World Cup and the rigours of that and all that kind of thing. A little bit of a discussion before we talk about the wider aspects of what he's talked about there. Aaron Moy in and of himself, how much of a positive influence has he been on Celtic as much as Celtic has been on him? Because I know he's not always get the most positive feedback or in glowing terms. He's a bit of a slow player. He plays a little bit differently to what you would expect of an Ange team. But I would say overall, when I look at it from a bird's eye view, I think he's probably had a more positive impact than negative one since he came to Celtic. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm gonna actually paraphrase something that Zinedine Zidane actually said once.
Okay.
He was talking about when he played for Real Madrid, and he said for every player like myself, there needs to be a Claude Makélélé who does the hard work so we can do the fancy stuff. And I think that's kind of what Aaron Moy is doing. He's doing the simple things and doing them really well, which frees up Hatate and Kyogo and Jota to do the more, and Haksabanovic more recently, to do the fancier stuff. Every team needs that kind of steady hand in the midfield. And I think Moy really, really gives us that. It's I'll be honest, I was not sure when we signed him. I thought he was too slow for Ange's very fast and very aggressive style of play. Mm-hmm. But again, it's about how you fit into a system. And Ange obviously knows his team far better than we do. And he saw that Aaron Moy was a missing piece of the puzzle. And the longer the season goes on, particularly with Callum McGregor getting injured, that is playing out more. You're seeing what a valuable asset a guy like Moy is.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, our squad profile, we skew towards sort of 25 years old and under. So having that older head on the pitch as well is of benefit to the entire team, I think.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I think he definitely doesn't do the glamorous things, but if there's one thing that I've learned as far as having Ange as the manager is, for all I think one way, more often than not, if I disagree with Ange, he goes on to prove you wrong. There's a reason why he's picked Moy. I guess I was just surprised at him being involved, because to me, he's the antithesis of everything that an Ange player is. But I guess that's the whole point of him being there, is to offer that difference and offer that calming influence off the bench that sometimes we do need. It's the one downside of the early part of Ange's Celtic career was you just felt we were a bit frantic in the way that we did things, and perhaps that he might be that calming influence that we need.
Well, I think of another more recent example, right? And excuse my language, I'm going to invoke the name of a Rangers player here. Rino Gattuso playing for Italy at the 2006 World Cup, right? Now, he was surrounded by guys like Pirlo and, you know, real class acts on the football field. He was not a classy player, right? You cannot tell me Rino Gattuso was a classy player. He wasn't. He was a grafter, and he was a bit of a thug when he had to be. But he was what Italy needed in that midfield at that time. And every team needs that player who is not about the flair. He's about getting the job done, you know? Even the world champions need that type of player in their team.
Yeah, absolutely. Fuji's Tonner says, Moy's very calm on the ball and can pick a pass. Great signing, in my opinion. So, yeah, listen, nobody's going to like every single player that plays in a Celtic shirt. Nobody's going to dislike any single player in a Celtic shirt. I guess in this occasion, you just choose to see the positives where they are, and I think Moy definitely brings those. And I think he's been... I think he's been, like I said, more of a positive signing than anything else for Celtic. Looking at the wider points of what he was talking about to the Herald, the fact that...
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy. And we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
He feels like the level that's been offered to him at Celtic, the demanding nature of the club, the Champions League football, the fact that playing at that higher level has put him in good stead for going to the World Cup. How important is that, do you think, to continuing to attract new players going forward, the constant appearances in the Champions League and the demands that that brings with it?
Well, I mean, it's the perfect advert. You look at somebody like Aaron Moy, and I mean absolutely no disrespect to the guy, but compare that to Tom Rogic.
Mm.
Now, Aaron Moy came to Celtic knowing he wasn't guaranteed to start every game, worked his socks off, got into the squad, did well, got back into the Australia team, did well, and now he's at the World Cup. Tom Rogic decided that it was time to move on, took far too long to find another club, couldn't break into the team, and now is an outcast in the national team. Mm. And, you know, it's sad, but we may never see Tom Rogic play top-level international football again.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I wonder if he looks back and sees what Aaron Moy is saying and thinks, maybe I left Celtic a wee bit too soon.
Well, the Tom Rogic situation, and I'm quite happy to go off on this tangent with you. Tom Rogic situation is one of the strangest I've ever come across. I would love to pick Jared's brains on this particularly, because he'll be better placed probably than either of us to discuss it. But
yeah,
my understanding from discussions that I had with people who are much more in the know than me was that Tom Rogic and his young family had spent enough time away from home and were leaving Scotland essentially to go back and settle in Australia, where he was going to play out the last couple of years of his career and then do whatever he was going to do after football. And here you're in a situation where he's ended up coming back to Britain, playing for West Bromwich Albion, who I would guess would not have been a destination he would have picked off the bat over remaining at Celtic. I mean, and certainly one that's possibly contributed to him not getting into the World Cup squad, where you might say if he'd stayed at Celtic and played under Ange in this particular team, he would be going to that World Cup. What's your opinion on the Tom Rogic situation and how that's come about? It's one of the strangest things I think I've ever seen.
Well, that's an interesting thing. You know, some people were slagging off the quality of the opposition in Sydney FC last night, but they have players going to the World Cup. And dare I say, if Tom Rogic had joined a team like that, he might well be going as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily about the level of the league that you play in, it's about the game time you get, and it's about the displays that you put on. I mean, case in point, right? Kyogo versus Daizen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Daizen plays much better for the Japan national team than he does for Celtic.
Yeah.
Because he's utilised in a much more effective position, right? So the Japan manager goes on, how does he play when he plays for me?
Mm-hmm.
As long as he's in the Celtic squad and he's playing regularly, that's enough.
Yeah.
It's not about what he does when he plays for Japan. Now, to flip that the other way, Kyogo has been sensational at Celtic, hasn't really done it for Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very, very limited time that he had, I think it was 20 minutes in one friendly match, Ryo Hatate didn't really do anything either. Which is not fair to him. I think in the fullness of time, he will force his way into the Japan squad, because there's a couple of midfielders are going to chuck it after this World Cup. So the gaps will open up there and Hatate will step in. But
yeah,
it's all about how players perform at the national team. And before Rogic left Celtic, he'd had issues with the national team already, because he dropped out of a couple of very important games.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't due to injury. It was due to him not being in the right frame of mind for it, which I'm not going to disparage or comment on anyone's mental health issue that I don't know about, because I don't know what's going on in his head, and it's not my place to try and speculate. But the fact of the matter is that, coupled with him leaving Celtic, coupled with him taking far too long to find another club, coupled with him going to a very obscure club that is not going to really get you noticed as much as playing in the Champions League or playing in the Australian Domestic League would, he pretty much self-sabotaged his chances of going to the World Cup, I think.
Daniel F. quite rightly points out, let's also remember he's going through some personal things, yep, Rogic, exactly. That is. Now, I don't know the nature of those. We're just talking here about the footballing impact, and so So it's fair enough to take all that into account, and it's maybe an indication that as much as mental health situations have become less taboo over the years, we're still not over that particular hurdle, and it still negatively impacts people a lot more than we would like to suggest in terms of the perception of them as players. You know, we wouldn't question his inability to play for his country if he had a broken leg, but the mental aspect of things doesn't get the same amount of respect. So all the best to him for the future and wherever that takes him.
Yeah, if anything I said there came across as condescending or insulting to Tom, I apologise, because that was not my intention.
No, I don't think he did.
I just think that the way things came together, it was a perfect storm to mean that he wouldn't go to this World Cup.
Yeah,
through no fault of his own.
No, I think that was clear. I just thought Daniel raised a good point, and it was good to clarify that. So we're going to spend the last 15 minutes, I was going to say, talking about something a little bit more fun, but bearing in mind the player we're about to talk about, it's probably not going to be too fun. So for anybody watching who was here at the start of the show, let me just pull up the clues that I had. We're doing, I guess, the Celt World Cup version for the World Cup. So it's Edson Braffitt. I was born in 1983. I got as many caps for my country as I did appearances for Celtic. I made my debut for Celtic in a 4-2 victory over Dunfermline in the Scottish Cup. I get 10 caps for my national team. And despite only getting 10 caps for my national team, I was a runner-up in a World Cup and appeared in the final. I would love to know, and maybe a Stato out there, maybe Alan Morrison, our very own Alan Morrison, if you're watching, I would love to know if there's a player with less caps for their country who's appeared in a World Cup final. There can't be many, but this is the man right here who I'll just show you. Edson Braffitt is the gentleman concerned, and that's him in the World Cup final itself, taking on a certain Andres Iniesta, who has his own links to Celtic now that Kyogo is playing for us. Liam, I have to say, Edson Braffitt played for Celtic in a loan spell that lasted 10 matches in the 2009-10 season, was brought in by none other than a certain Tony Mowbray to play for the club. And I've maintained, I was still a season ticket holder at the time, I've maintained that single season, prior to Dubaigate and everything that happened with Liam, with Neil Lennon's departure.
I'm getting blamed for everything they
do. prior to Neil Lennon's departure, the Tony Mowbray season was perhaps the worst season I've had as a Celtic supporter. And Edson Braffitt, in my head, kind of encompasses that. Is that an unfair statement to make? Is that too much to put on his shoulders?
Is it in the sense that he had an absolute shocker at Celtic, but then went on to play in a World Cup final? So clearly he was a player, right? As were several of the members of the Celtic squad at that time, mm-hmm, who were shocking for us, but went on to be very successful elsewhere. I think Braffitt was one symptom of a plague that was seeping through the entire club at the time, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it was a strange time, because it was, I don't know how to describe it with Tony Mowbray, but it was just like, I've never had a period as a Celtic supporter where I was more convinced of the number of games that we would lose in a season. Do you know what I mean?
Even Tony Mowbray himself, he's had success at other clubs before and after Celtic.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not, he alone is not necessarily the problem here. I think it was just the wrong type of manager for Celtic, the wrong time for him to go to Celtic.
Yeah.
And some very, very poor choices in terms of personnel that were brought in and allowed to leave.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think back on that time. Edson Braffitt, looking at him specifically, I mean, he let's not forget, we loaned him from Bayern Munich. It wasn't as if he was an absolute unknown in the World Cup landscape, in the footballing landscape. He was. There was no reason for us to think he would be as much of a flop as he was, but he only made 12 appearances for Bayern Munich on top of the 10 appearances for us, and never played more than 35 games for any other team between then and his eventual retirement in 2020. He is apparently, according to Wikipedia, playing for somebody called Palm Beach Stars, but I don't know that we'd call that a legitimate level of football.
Well, it sounds like a nice place to play, to be fair.
The other thing I was going to ask on the back of that, though, I remember around that time specifically, and for a number of years since, loans of that type being a feature of Celtic's business and the way that we did things. Is that a good way of doing business to you, leaning so heavily on the loan market when you're Celtic, or do you like what we're doing now, which I think is leaning more towards the permanent signings?
I prefer permanent signings, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give a wee personal anecdote here. My view of Celtic signing people on loan is quite heavily tainted by a very negative encounter I had with one of our loan signings.
Are you going to name and shame?
Yes, I am.
Go for it.
Right. When Robbie Keane came to Celtic.
Right?
Now, I just want to say I am not questioning his abilities as a footballer. As a footballer, he is one of the best that Ireland has ever produced.
Yes.
As a man, he is a completely detestable little cretin. We got invited to we bought a table at the Celtic Player of the Year dinner that year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you recall, that was not a great year, right?
Correct. We didn't,
right. So,
That wasn't Tony Mowbray's year, was it?
It was pretty close to that time. I don't know if it was exactly on that time. But anyway, We had not had a great year. So, naturally, at the Player of the Year dinner, things were a bit muted, right? But the players, to give them their due, were making the effort to go out of their way to talk to people, to pose for photos, to sign autographs. Anything you wanted was there, right? Because they realised they owed the fans because of what we'd had to put up with that season.
Yeah.
Robbie Keane made a token, about 20-minute appearance, and then started swearing at me when I asked if I could take a picture with him.
Right.
He then started swearing at these two little boys who asked for an autograph, to the point one of them was in tears before storming off in a huff. I don't know who pissed in his chips that night, but, you know, he was obviously very unhappy with something. But he had absolutely no right to... Now, he wants to shout at me, a half-cut bloody, you know, Egypt in a penguin suit asking for a 40. Fine, right? I can take that. But two wee kids having their idol reducing them to tears? No, not on.
Yeah,
not on.
Not great. And given the manner in which we started the show, talking about the, you know, charitable effects of positive aspects for children, it's not a great tone to strike, no.
I guess my overriding point is that when you have loan signings, you invite mercenaries.
True.
And whenever I think of mercenaries, my mind goes to that wee rat, Robbie Keane.
Right. An interesting wee tidbit, actually, now that I'm just looking up while you were regaling the crowd with that story. He actually scored his first goal for Celtic in the same 4-2 victory over Dunfermline that Edson Braithwaite made his debut in. So it was...
There you go. It was a perfect start.
It was the same team. It was the same year. It was all the same. I'm disappointed to hear that because I have to say my brother and I traipsed down to Celtic Park for the 10 or 10.30 p.m. Announcement of his signing. I remember it well. Mm. And so disappointing to hear that you've had not so great an experience with
him. How many kids did he swear at that night?
No comment whatsoever. I can't attest to the positive or negative natures of his character. So, with that said, I think we'll probably call it a day there. It's been an interesting one, though. Plenty to discuss, even though there's not a lot going on in the Celtic world at the moment. Please do make sure, though, to tune into Axom every weekday for the bulletin and throughout the weekend for extra content. There might not be a lot of games on at the moment, but we will do our best to continue the content with you. If you've got anything you would like to see us do, then please let us know in the comments or on the socials. Any seasons you would like us to discuss, any aspects of the current day club that you would like us to discuss. We are open to ideas during this World Cup shutdown while goings on at Celtic Park are quiet. Any last words, Liam, from you?
No, I'm just going to say the World Cup kicks off this weekend, and I know that for various reasons, some people are going to watch it, some people are not. But just a more general point, I just want to say that football is football, politics is politics. Often those intermingle, and I accept that. If you don't want to watch this World Cup, that's fine. Good for you. You do that. I'm going to watch it and I'm going to enjoy it. But I do not in any way condone or support what the Qatari government is doing to various people of various minority groups.
I think that's fair to say, and I think that would be echoed by myself and most of the people watching this show. So with that in mind, we will see you next week when we will be deep in the thick of World Cup football, and we'll certainly be talking about the impact of current Celtic players. Hopefully Dyson Maeda will have made a positive impact. Hopefully Cameron Carter-Vickers, hopefully Juranovic, and hopefully, who am I missing? Aaron Moy is the other one.
If I mysteriously disappeared next week, well, someone needs to look into Robbie Keane's Yakuza connections.
No, thank you, Liam. All the best to our boys at the World Cup. We will be watching with bated breath. And Juranovic, if you and your Croat compatriots can bring home the win, then that'll get me a tidy wee sum from the family sweepstake. Liam, thank you very much for joining me. Everybody, yes. We will see you again very soon.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today, because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's EASY to 203203.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet, but if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.